welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend.
Hello and happy Valentine's Day. It's Jessica from the podcast, and I'm so glad you're with us for another episode. Hope you're all doing something special with your sweethearts or celebrating with your family. Valentine's is such a great day to just reflect upon all the love in your life, so hope you can make it special for those that you love in your life. So today we're going to keep with the heart theme, and I thought we would talk about congenital heart defects. How's that for a transition? February is Congenital Heart Defect Awareness Month, and today my guest is Kira Irvine. Kira's daughter Ivana was born in April of 2014, and she came in fighting for her life. She has a congenital heart defect that continues to threaten her life every single day. She spent 400 days in the hospital post-op after that first surgery. They've had a very challenging first few years of Ivana's life, and the battle is not over. So Kira is such an inspiration to me, what she's been able to go through and the spirit of positivity she's been able to maintain. It's truly extraordinary. So let's get talking with Kira about her darling daughter. All right, I want to welcome Kira to the show. Hi, Kira.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
Lovely January morning.
Yeah, it is pouring buckets in California. How's the weather? You are my first Canadian guest, so tell me about where you live.
I live in Calgary, which is in Alberta, so it's actually not that far from California. I think it's a 3-hour plane ride, but we are obviously really cold. We're actually in the middle of a cold snap, so we're thinking like, you know, minus 30 degrees with
wow.
a windshield of like up to minus 40 right now.
Wow. Do you even go out in that?
Not really. It's very, you know, like we went out yesterday. We had a doctor's appointment at the hospital yesterday, so just quickly from one garage to another.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that must be really hard to even prepare for. And then you bundle up, and then you get inside somewhere, and then you debundle, and it's like so much effort.
Oh my gosh, yeah, you're so bundled up, and like to pack my daughter up for and take her out is quite the chore.
Oh, sure.
Quite the predicament, and you're all bundled up in sweaters, and so you get really sweaty, so you get really hot, and then all of a sudden you get really cold again, and then you're really hot, so.
Yeah, it's like freeze or burn. Oh my gosh, yeah, that sounds dramatic. Well, I am really excited to be talking with you today. It is Congenital Heart Defect Awareness Month in February, and you have a special story to tell about your daughter and your experience. So why don't you give a little background on yourself and your family and a little bit about your motherhood journey?
Yeah, I'm married to a wonderful man named Nick, and we got married in 2012, and after he was finishing up his schooling and, you know, we were in a house and everything, we decided to try for a baby. We were lucky enough to get pregnant on the first try, and life was wonderful, and then we went for that 20-week ultrasound. It's called a detailed ultrasound, and generally for most people, that's the one where you find out if you're having a boy or a girl. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the exam did not quite go the way we thought it would. And it's was there that we discovered she had a heart defect. And it wasn't just a little, you know, hole in the heart or a VSD. It was quite the significant heart defect. And from there, our life was flipped upside down, to say the least.
Wow. Wow. And so what did they tell you about your daughter's prognosis?
Initially, you know, they gave us kind of like the one diagnosis, and then as the pregnancy went further on, they kind of discovered a few other things, but a lot of it was just, it was kind of a, we had to wait and see until she was born to get the exact diagnosis, and one was worse than the other, and one was more, one was more life-threatening than the other, and unfortunately, she did get the more terminal diagnosis.
Wow. And so even before she was born, you knew that her condition ultimately would be terminal?
Potentially. We knew for sure okay. She would require surgery. But when it came to the one part of her diagnosis, you might hear me further along talk about her collaterals or her MACAs. That part is, for our for all of our cardiologists, it's a very big question mark. Like, these kids are, every single MAPA kid is different, and some are great and have, you know, are able to have a full repair, and some, like my daughter, are a huge question mark, and it's a, they have no idea what the future is going to hold, and it's just one of those, it's really hard to explain, but
yeah. I'm sure it's very complex. And so are heart defects usually detectable in utero? Do those scans usually show it or yeah. not?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of them are caught prenatally. Obviously, a lot of them are still not, actually, and it's just, I think it's a hit and miss, actually, but they are detectable by ultrasound, but sometimes they do get missed. A lot of things get missed in ultrasounds. They're ultrasounds, but ours was detected, and then we ended up having a lot of ultrasounds after that.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so what was your initial reaction? I mean, you were hoping to find out the gender, and you were just excited to see your baby on the screen, I'm sure, and then you get this devastating news. What was that like for you?
My reaction was a little unique. Earlier in the pregnancy, so closer to 13 weeks, we had a different scare. And that one kind of, that was when I had my most emotional outbreak. And then that one ended up turning out to be nothing.
Wow.
So then when we went for this one and got the actual, like, heart diagnosis, I was kind of okay with it. I was like, okay, so what's next? Like, you know, so, and I kind of was a little bit chipper about it. And I was like, okay, so we have to go for surgery, and what does this mean? And it took quite a while. And then my husband, on the other end, he took the initial news of the heart a bit rougher than I did. But then as the pregnancy progressed, and especially about the month or two before she was born, then that's when it kind of started hitting me. And I started getting a bit more emotional about what was about to come our way and how much our life was about to change.
Right, absolutely. And so as you prepared to deliver her, what was that like, and what was her delivery like, and what happened just after?
So I we're from Calgary, and even though we're a major city, the States is like this too. There's just only certain hospitals that do open heart surgery. So yeah. I actually had to relocate when I was about 37 weeks pregnant up to Edmonton. It's just 3 hours north of Calgary. It's just another major city. Because their children's hospital does perform open heart surgery. So okay. I moved into the Ronald McDonald House and kind of just sat there waiting. We tried to proceed with a regular vaginal delivery, and I was induced at 39 weeks because Miss Muff didn't want to come out, and she was riding high and riding pretty and was very comfortable, but we needed to make sure that her delivery was controlled and whatnot. So I was induced at 39 weeks. Unfortunately, she kept decelling, so her heart rate kept dropping. And when I was 6 centimeters, they ended up rushing me in for an emergency surgery. And that was kind of my delivery.
Yeah, wow. And so tell me about meeting her for the first time.
I was quite surprised to actually meet her when I did. We had the C-section, but for the C-section, because my epidural had already run out, I ended up being intubated and sedated. So when I woke up, I already thought she had left the hospital or been transported to the children's hospital where she had surgery. So when I woke up, they're like, oh, you know, we're just getting her ready to go. Do you want to see her? And I was like, what? Why is she still here? And I was kind of actually freaking out. But I realized only a few minutes had passed and not hours.
Yeah.
Well, I've never had a C-section before, and I've never been, like, put out. So I didn't realize how
sure you were really out of it. Yeah.
So they brought her around. She was already packed up into the transport incubator, but she looked so adorable. She was like sucking on her thumb, and she looked amazing. Like, she, you know, she looked perfect. You had no idea.
Oh.
And it was just so magical, and she was just the cutest thing. And I think the most special part of that whole moment was my husband. He just, like, he had that, like, in love look. It was the cutest thing ever. Like, he was just completely, like, my entire pregnancy, you know, he was happy and everything, but he was never one of those husbands who was, like, always rubbing my belly or, you know, and then just, the moment she was there, he was just, like, completely enamored with her. It was the cutest thing ever.
Oh, that's the sweetest. That's the sweetest. And so you named her what?
Her name is Ivana, and it's a mixture. It's a name we found. My husband found it after nixing all my ideas. But thankfully, it kind of, one of the names I was going for was Evelyn, and my husband really liked the name Anna, and so we found Ivana, and it actually means little fighter, which was perfect. We didn't realize that until years later, until like last year, but her name actually means little fighter, which is so perfect.
I love that. And so they transported her over to the Children's Hospital after you got to meet her, thankfully. And so what did those next days and weeks look like for her?
Oh, a little crazy. So, yeah, she was transported over, and then that's where they did some testing to confirm which kind of heart defect she had. Mm. Unfortunately, it was kind of the worser of the two they were playing with. Mm. And as weird as it sounds, though, it meant that she had a good circulation to go home, so she was stable enough. But it was one of the worst of the two diagnoses. So they're like, well, we don't know if there's anything we'll be able to do. So we're going to send you home and we'll see if there's anything we can do in about 6 months from now.
Really? So, I didn't realize that it could go that long. We had another episode, episode 10, with Emily Ames, and her son, Henry, she did not know about his heart defect prior to him being born. She found out the day he was born, and then he went in for surgery the next day. You know, it was like imminent.
That's the unique thing about heart defects. There are some, like, and that's the thing is some people, because her surgery had to be put off, some people are like, oh, it must be not that bad. I'm like, actually, no, it was because it was worse, but she had her own unique circulation, but it's one that, like, can, if it's the severe end of the type she has, it's terminal. Like, there's nothing more they can do. It's hard to explain, but yeah, so there's types of, had she had the other heart defect, yeah, she would have actually had to have surgery within the week.
Sure.
But this one, it was like, no, we have to hold off, but because we're hoping something will grow.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. Wow. Yeah. Our bodies are so amazing, and there's so much that we do know, and then there's so much yet to learn. It's just mind-boggling. And so how did you approach those first – you were sent home. And so how did you approach those first days and weeks with her just trying to be normal, I guess?
Yeah, actually, we were home the first 5 months of her life, and looking back, I just think magic. They were just magical. We got to just be this – and if anything, I look back on as a blessing. We actually got 5 months of normalcy. We got five months to just bond and be with our daughter. And it was just, and I'm so glad we were blessed with that, because with what we were about to endure and how our journey would unfold, I think I look at that as a little tender mercies.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So as you approached that 5 month, 6 month mark, what began to transpire?
We had a few tests, and we went back up to Edmonton on 3 months, and she had a cardiac cath, and it was there that we saw that some of her collaterals were growing, which was a good thing. So it meant that surgery was in our future, like, meaning we could have surgery.
Okay.
That was, like, I think the biggest worry at that time was whether we could have surgery or not. In October 2014, so she was just over 5 months old, we brought her up to Edmonton, and she had her first open heart surgery. And at that time, it was October, I thought we would, going into surgery, because of how well she'd done at home, you know, our cardiologist was like, you know, this is one of the bigger surgeries, it's one of the biggest open heart surgeries there is, but, you know, with Ivana, like, you know, it's generally a 6 to 8 week recovery in hospital at this age, but with her, you know, we wouldn't be surprised if she was home within a month. So we were thinking, I was making Christmas plans that year because I thought we would totally be home. And obviously that didn't happen, and we ended up being in hospital for 13 months.
Oh my gosh. So why did you end up being in the hospital for 13 months? Can you give it in layman's terms?
Yeah. I mean, most of it primarily had to do with developing airway issues. So she developed something called tracheomalacia, so a floppy airway. And so we just, after the surgery went great, but when it came time to extubating, she just could not successfully extubate. And so we tried different methods and different techniques over 5 months. And after 5 months of being intubated, we finally had to face a tracheostomy, which was, it's funny, she's had a lot of really big, big surgeries, and to date, she's now had 4 open heart surgeries. She's had a major left thoracotomy, like really risky surgeries. And the tracheostomy is considered actually quite the routine. And some, heck, for adults, they do that at bedside. They do tracheostomies at bedside. But it was the hardest surgery we said yes to, because it's not just saying yes to a procedure, it's saying yes to a lifestyle.
Hmm. And so, was that something that stayed implanted in her?
Not forever. It's something she'll eventually grow out of, but we're looking at years.
Okay.
This unique situation, and it's like it dictates day to day life. It's something that literally controls every aspect of our life, day in and day out. Today.
And so, what does it look like, and why does it impact your life so much? For people that don't have any idea about this.
A tracheostomy, so it's just a tube inserted into her trachea from the outside, and then she's hooked up to a ventilator. Like, when you think of ventilators, you think of hospital patients who are intubated and sedated, but she's hooked up to this little home ventilator that it doesn't breathe for her because she still breathes. Like, she still, you know, initiates her own breath, but it helps support and gives her a bigger and helps deliver pressure to help stent her airway open. And so she's attached to this quite big, it's not, for a ventilator, it's small because it's a home ventilator. It's not as big as the hospital ventilators, but it's still a big machine that we have to, that she's attached to. She's attached to a ventilator that makes sure that she gets enough air. Wow. And then the ventilator at home is attached to a humidifier that provides humidity. And then she's also on 4 liters of oxygen. So the ventilator is also attached to oxygen as well. Wow. So like I said, it limits, even in our own home, she pretty much, unless we flip her over to the transport circuit, she is either in the living room or her bedroom.
Wow.
So even in our own home, she's very limited on where she can go currently now.
Wow. And that just makes me think, I mean, so many times moms complain about all the baby gear and, you know, packing up the diaper bag and all the things. But, I mean, you are dealing at a whole different level of what is required.
Whenever we go out, we have her vent. We have, you know, an extra battery for the vent. We have our suction machine that is very vital. We have a trach emergency kit. We have oxygen tanks. She goes through a lot of oxygen, like those large oxygen tanks. She goes through one within 3 hours. So whenever we're an afternoon out means we need to at least bring 2 oxygen tanks with us, plus 2 emergency ones we always keep in our car. And top of all, and then her feeding and her toys and her, you know, and just, and, right. and yeah, all the normal baby stuff that we also bring with us. So it's quite the...
Wow, that is a lot. And so how have you dealt with having to learn all this stuff? I mean, parents stress out enough as it is, you know, keeping their kids safe and healthy and functional. But I mean, how did you do with learning all of this and your confidence level and being able to, you have a trach emergency kit. I mean, that freaks me out. I don't know how I would feel with that. How does that make you feel?
As most trach parents say this, it becomes your new normal. It's something, you know, so during our 13-month admission, 11 of those months were in ICU. So you just become, I don't know, you kind of get used to it. You sit in this ICU, you see all this intense stuff go around you, and so this becomes, and you become desensitized. If anything, I feel like I'm a little bit desensitized.
And you just get trained,
and you watch the other RTs do it, and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm sure you do learn. It's like a crash course in nursing, right?
I do. Yeah, I actually often say I often say that I'm like a little nurse, or if anything, I feel like I'm an honorary respiratory therapist.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Wow. You are amazing, and it's amazing what moms just step up to. It's like, well, you don't have a choice, you know. So. As much as that might freak me out that I think, oh, I could never be capable of that. I mean, we all think that before we're put into these situations where we just do it because you have no other option.
Yeah, like, I guess the one thing, I do say that same thing. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know how you do it. And I often say that. I say, you don't really have an option. What the option you do have is how you handle it. Like, it's how you cope with it. There are definitely some trach families who go through what we went through, and it definitely... don't handle it as well, but I do feel like at least me and my husband handle a lot of this with grace, as much grace as we could.
Yeah, where do you think that comes from? How do you sum up that strength?
I think for my husband, like, my husband's actually a paramedic, so I think that helped a little bit too.
Yeah,
he deals with life threatening situations on a daily basis, and then I don't know. For me, I think it's just part of my personality. I've always been someone who looks at life as a glass half full, or I'm always one to look at the silver lining. That's just kind of my personality to begin with.
Yeah. Well, you're fortunate to have that personality, because I'm sure it has served you very well in these circumstances. So let's go back to your hospital stay. 13 months, 400 days, 400 days. And like you said, how much of that was in the ICU? 11 months?
Oh, just almost 11 months. And back and forth between, again, the Edmonton ICU and then the ICU at the Children's Hospital here in Calgary. So, you know, several ICU transfers, two by STARS. STARS is like their medical helicopter that they only use for like very dire situations. So actually, her second STARS transfer was on Mother's Day the 1 year. So she likes to, you know.
Dramatic.
you know, that's exactly. She's very dramatic. I feel like our life is very dramatic. Sometimes when I am telling our story, I'm like, do people believe me? Because it's always one extreme after another. Like, it's such extreme circumstances. And I'm like, it's something that you read about in a, I don't know, in a book, or you watch in a movie, and I'm like, this is actually our life.
Oh my gosh. And I'm sure you just never expected this to be your normal. This is just your life.
Yeah, it's definitely unique. And you know, like I said, there's hard parts, and at the same time, there's been some beautiful parts too. So.
Yeah. So what would you say, I'm sure there was a lot of hard parts, but what would you say was one of the most challenging things when you were in the context of the hospital and enduring the airway issues and things like that? Was there something particularly difficult?
I think the hardest part is, okay, so I'm a social butterfly. I'm out there. I like, in the ICU in the beginning, I was like, meeting other heart families, and I was always wanting to know everybody's story and befriend every other heart family that came to that unit. And I think, but over time, it got really, really hard, because these families would come in, and some of them would have very hard circumstances, but then they would recover and leave the ICU, and we would remain, and we were left behind. Mm-hmm. And it was like that for a very long time. And I think that was the hardest part. And I almost had to like kind of shut down a little bit. And I kind of, for a little while, and even now, like we just had another open heart surgery last month. It was just to replace a pulmonary valve, but we went up there and in order to continue to protect myself, and I had to kind of stop being that social butterfly. I had to stop reaching out to other families and be that consoling person, because it was taking too much from me, and I had to kind of just like concentrate on our journey and concentrate on Ivana. So I think that's been the hardest part, is I've had to kind of change part of my own personality to deal with this somewhat. So yeah, I'm still going, and I'm still, you know, if someone messages me and asks for advice and everything, but I guess I'm more choosy. I don't just like befriend the most like every heart family in the world. I kind of stick to the ones that also had the more complicated journeys. Snobby being horrible as it sounds, but that's how I had needed to cope, I guess.
Yeah, well, no, that makes a lot of sense. You would have to conserve your energy, because I'm sure just dealing with your own situation is so taxing and so draining and so time consuming. So to really spread yourself too thin doesn't serve anybody, including your own family.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. But then I'm sure that in the context of the hospital, there was also some really beautiful and powerful lessons that you learned. Was there anything in particular that stands out in respect to that?
I think there's actually been a few things. Like, definitely, if anything, I've learned that you definitely learn your own strength. You definitely are pushed to the very edge of your own strength, and that's for sure happened. And I've even been broken a few times. I've even had a few breaking moments, and I've broken down. But thankfully, you know, the ICU up in Edmonton particularly is filled with some incredible people. If anything, I feel very blessed. I want to meet some of the brightest minds of our country. Like, I can't describe what that's like. It's just, you get to talk to these people who are just, they're the best of the best. And you get to build these relationships. And because of our prolonged ICU journey, like most heart families go through, and they probably couldn't even really tell you any of the names of those physicians, I actually got to know some of these people. I've been able to meet a few of their spouses, and I've got to know about their families and stuff. And I think that's been kind of a unique part, is I And or every time we go out there, they know who we are, and we're just like family to them. So I think that's been kind of the beautiful part.
Yeah. It's interesting how sometimes our biggest challenges in life can make us, force us to be part of a community that we may not have chosen, but it can be the most influential community for good in our lives if we choose to see it that way. And it sounds like that's how you're approaching it.
Yeah, if anything, like I said, we've had a few admissions since our big admission. Over the last year, we've definitely gone up to Edmonton twice already, and we have a third trip coming up. Mm-hmm. If anything, I get excited when we go back up. When she's stable, like if everything's well and we're kind of going up for something more routine, I get excited because I get to go, I'm going back to my second home. I'm going back to see some of my other family that, you know, we don't get to see. And I get to be that proud mom and like, look at my baby. Look what she's doing now.
Yeah.
Like, she's very behind, but like, you know, but now I'm like, look at, she's standing now. And especially this last surgery, she, like I said, we had surgery in December, to replace a pulmonary valve, and we were only in ICU for one night. Like, that just blew everybody away, and just, that was so mind-blowing to the entire team, considering last time we went up to Edmonton for surgery, we were in ICU for 323 days, and this time just one night in ICU, and we were home within less than four, we were home after that surgery less than 2 weeks. Like, that just blew everybody away. It was, like I said, like, they're my family, and this is my baby, and I get to be, I got to have that proud mommy moment.
Absolutely, and they really get it. I'm sure one of the hardest parts would be that people don't really understand what you're going through without having been in your shoes, without having prolonged stays in the hospital and a terminal diagnosis kind of weighing on you. Until you've really, you know, walked in your shoes, you can't possibly understand what you've been through. But these doctors who pour, and nurses and medical professionals who have dedicated their whole life to kids just like Ivana, I mean, that has to mean so much to you.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, like I said, yeah, it's very, very few people. I have very few people in my life who, and more because just because I've met them along this way, have actually know what we've been through. But yeah, these doctors are just, you know, they see the worst of the worst, and we're up there. We're up there definitely when it comes to days in hospital. We're among the 1%, but they still get it.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
I'm so grateful for them.
And so, I mean, we talked about having the trach and having the oxygen and everything, but what does your day-to-day life look like?
I was on a maternity leave, and I actually got an extended. So here in Canada, we get a one-year maternity leave, and then I actually got an additional 9 months off through our government. So I actually had 21 months off.
Wow.
So I went back to work a little bit.
And what do you do?
I just work in administration. I work with the legal side of health records, and I just work and I went back to work casually. So my husband's a paramedic, and he works in a rotation. So I work around my husband's schedule. So in a day-to-day, it all depends on whether it's a day I'm at home with Ivana because my husband's working, or whether it's because I'm at work. So I don't know. We also have nursing care. So at nighttime, we have a nurse that shows up at 10 p.m. who pretty much just watches our daughter.
Wow.
And then does a few tasks around the house. But usually, so say if it's a day I'm not working, at 8 a.m. I wake up and I go relieve our nurse so they can go home. And then usually Ivana sleeps until about 9, 10 o'clock sometimes. She's a really good sleeper.
Wow.
And then, I don't know, our day is getting up, and she gets she's tube fed, so it's usually starting her 10 o'clock feeds. And then right now we're working on a lot of physiotherapy, so she gets, where I'm doing a lot of standing exercises, so she goes in her standing frame, or she, I'm doing sitting to standing exercises with her, and this week I'm going to get back to doing some feeding exercises because we have a swallow study coming up soon, and that's kind of our day for at home. And then usually we have at least one medical appointment a week, so if we have a medical appointment, then it's packing her up and taking her for an appointment, which is two people. Like, we can't do solo rides with her yet. She's still too critical and too complex, but yeah.
Wow. And so I know that you don't really have a comparison, but being in Canada versus, say, in the States, like, how does her healthcare look different because you're in Canada versus here? Do you have any idea?
A little bit, because like I said, I have actually, along this journey, I'm part of multiple support groups, both heart and trach. Right now I definitely am more involved in the trach groups because
yeah,
they're the ones who I most recognize with. Our healthcare systems are quite different, I gotta say. And I kind of, if anything, I've never been more grateful to live in Canada. No offense. I was able to have 21 months paid leave off. Like, it wasn't full wages, but I still got 21 months off.
Right.
To be with my child, right? That's insane.
That is. That just sounds crazy here. It's like 6 weeks. 6 weeks here.
I know. I have a friend whose daughter, they're not trach, but they're heart and major. They've had a lot of other complications, and they're actually just about to hit 400 days. And her daughter has the same diagnosis as Ivana. Mm. And she, in order to maintain insurance and coverage, she had to go back to work. So she's back and forth. Like, her husband is able to be off more often, so he's at the hospital with her daughter, but she has to leave to a different city every week.
Wow.
To work, to ensure that they have insurance, to ensure their daughter gets the proper care. And I just find that mind-blowing a little bit. And but so basically here in Canada, we have universal health care, so we don't deal with insurance companies. Like, we have insurance companies for things like dental care, I guess,
uh-huh.
and anything above, but anything that's considered like essential is paid for. So I'll never see a medical bill in my life.
Wow. Do you have any idea how much all this has cost?
I'm tempted to request her. Request her invoice soon, but I know we're in the tens of millions of dollars. I know that. Oh. I don't know how many millions, but I know we're in the tens of millions for sure.
Because these are such high-level surgeries, and then just the constant hospital care and the night after night. I mean, wow.
Yeah, and one night in ICU is, you know, 5 times that of a night in a regular room, right?
Wow.
So just, yeah, and she's had a lot of major, like, open-heart surgeries. Like, that's a huge cost. I don't know how much this has all been, but that's because I'll never see a medical bill
because
of our healthcare system and stuff. Like, I don't know. It's kind of mind-boggling. And then we're home, and we have home care. So we have nurses in our home every night. And we do, here in Alberta, every province and every state in the USA does home care differently for these trach children.
Okay.
Here in Alberta, we do something called self-managed care. That's not something that is all, every place does theirs differently, and every setup is differently. But essentially, we chose to do self-managed care. So every month, we receive quite the large amount of money that goes into a special bank account, and we just hire our own nurses. So we hired for our main nurses, we have 2 LPNs and 1 EMT, and they just come and work for us, and we pay them ourselves, but out of that account that the government gives to us.
Wow.
It's heavily audited, so because it's taxpayer money, it's very heavily audited to make sure we're using the money appropriately. But that's in the long run, it's cheaper. It's cheaper for her to be home and under our roof than it is to be in hospital still. But she's stable enough to be home, and we just have nursing at nighttime because she needs to be watched 24 hours a day.
Wow. What? That is just extraordinary, and you're just so fortunate in your circumstance to be able to receive this much care without having that burden of how are we going to pay for this, or what does this mean, or what about the therapies, or can we do enough for our child? Like, that's not even a consideration for you. So that's really fortunate for you.
In the USA, the coverage is there. It's just you're dealing with an insurance company and deductibles, and we don't deal with that there. So it's very, our healthcare systems are very different, and there's pros and cons to private. We're actually in the middle of a referral down to a surgeon in California right now, actually.
Yeah, so tell me about that. So what's next for her, and what are you hoping for to come through in California?
So there's several things. This 2017, we're hitting the ground running. We've got a lot on the go. Most notably there's a surgeon in California. His name is Dr. Hanley, and the very first surgery my daughter had, it was called a unifocalization, and this Dr. Hanley was actually the man who pioneered the surgery. So this is his. And then the surgery my daughter has here in Edmonton, per se, they only do like 2 a year, whereas this man, he does like 1 a week. So just MAPCAs or collaterals is his specialty. So my daughter's diagnosis is his bread and butter. And we have now reached a point here where our medical team has said, we don't know if there's much more we can do here. So our healthcare system allows us to seek healthcare elsewhere. And so we have sent all our medical records down to Dr. Hanley. He's initially come back, and based on all her old records, he said, I don't know. Cause so even though MAPKA's and what my daughter's diagnosis is his bread and butter, she's on severe end even for him. So we are hopefully next month going back up to Edmonton to do a cath, which will really show him where things are right now and if there's anything he can rehabilitate. And if he accepts our case, so if he feels like there's something he can do, our government will fly her down and pay for the surgery.
Wow. Whew. Well, that would be something. That would be something. I'm just sure you're on pins and needles waiting for any resolution with that.
Yeah, it's very scary because, like I said, our team is preparing us for a no. Like,
right.
We've heard he's someone who likes a challenge, and he rarely says no, but I am aware of cases similar to Ivana where he has said there's nothing I can do. So it's just, I'm both balancing hope and complete dread right now.
Sure, really. Absolutely. Oh, well, I just hope the best for that. Oh, I really do. Gosh, that would be so amazing. And so I'm just curious, Kira, how have you changed as a person? I mean, think back before you had your sweet daughter and before this challenge. How is your life and how is your perspective on life and motherhood different today than it was before this?
Oh, so different. There's times where I wonder if there's both been good and bad changes, I think, from before and after Ivana. I think, on the bad thing, I definitely feel like I've hardened a bit. I'm definitely, I don't know, like, I sit there, I work in healthcare, and I'm so glad. I don't think I could be a nurse. I don't think I could be an actual healthcare provider. I can't see outside our own journey right now. I can't see past our own journey. And yeah, so I think, I know that will, I've been told it will eventually subside and I will be able to kind of not be, I will soften again. Definitely I feel like I'm hardened right now. And I have a hard time seeing people complain about, in my opinion, things that are not such a big deal.
Sure.
Plus side though, like I said, our perspective has changed. Me and my husband, we really value what's important. We know, again, if anything, you won't see me complain. You'll probably never see me again complain about those, stupid like Facebook rants, like, oh, my life is so horrible. I got
a speeding ticket today. Exactly.
we don't complain about, we'll never take certain things for granted again, and we'll never complain about the little things, and we really know what hard is and whatnot.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, I just think you are absolutely extraordinary, and I think the listeners will definitely feel of that perspective today and realize, yes, we all have challenges going on in our lives, but really focusing on what matters most and what are the things that truly have weight and truly matter, the things that can get us down, or, what are the things that we can maybe put less weight on and let go a little more to just enjoy the life that we have. So what do you want people to know about congenital heart defects? And what has this journey taught you about spreading this message?
I think the biggest lesson and what I want people to know is just that, the biggest thing is how common they are. Like, technically congenital heart defects is one in every 100 births. And that seems like a lot, but why am I not hearing about this? And it's because it can range from a little hole in the heart that will close on its own all the way to obviously something Goliath like my daughter has and will require a lifetime of surgeries. That's the biggest thing is there needs to be a lot more research and stuff. It actually kills more babies than all five forms of pediatric cancer combined. Like, in a lot, so everyone hears about pediatric cancer, yet no one hears about heart defects. And it's just a little bit. So I guess that's why the awareness needs to be more, and just that this is common. And ever since we've had Ivana, I've definitely had people come out and be like, I've had people and friends like, oh, I actually had, my son actually had a heart defect. And it ended up being usually generally, again, a hole that closes on its own. But again, that's how common they are. So
absolutely,
that's the biggest thing, is just how common it is.
I just wish the very best for your daughter, and hopefully you'll get good news from California. Well, Kira, I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
I had to, this is going to sound hilarious, but my mom called me last night and she was, because I blogged our entire journey and was very public with our journey. Mm-hmm. And she was going back and reading some of those first posts, because I blogged our wedding, our engagement. So when we got the diagnosis, I blogged about the initial diagnosis when I was just pregnant. And I remember going back and thinking things were, I had this idea of how things were going to happen. She was going to be born, she was going to have surgery, and she was going to be okay, because that's how most journeys go. And it's kind of mind-blowing how, I think the biggest thing I learned is life is not always going to pan out the way you plan it. Like, things are going to happen, and I guess it's just, and I think the biggest thing I've had to learn to do, and I'm a huge planner, so I plan everything to a T, and I've had to learn to make additional plans and backup plans and learn to go with the flow. I think that's anything I've had to let go and learn to go with the flow.
Yeah. Well, where can people follow you online if they want to follow along with your journey?
So our family blog is just the urbanfamilyblog.com. Mm-hmm. And my Instagram is just my name, so it's at kiara.irvine. And that's kind of the two biggest. Oh, and then we do have a Facebook page, actually, that a lot of people follow along. It's called, again, the Irvine Family / Ivana Special Heart. So a lot of people also follow along there. So she's got a lot of love. If anything, that's one of the biggest blessings has been the love that our daughter gets. She has quite the following and love, and people are quite enamored and in love with her.
She's so cute.
She's very cute, and people are just, I think, enamored that, like, she's not even 3 years old, and she has so much strength, and she is always just, she's so happy and content. And if anything, the biggest comment we get in hospital from, again, doctors is just, for a toddler, she is just quite the trooper, and she just takes, they'll be pulling blood for lab work, and she's a very hard poke, and she, like, barely flinches for blood. Or, you know, like, she's just so easygoing, and when people, so that's the biggest thing is people just love her and
that makes the best.
And that helps me. It helps me with the love and support we receive.
That's amazing. Well, Kiara, thank you so much for sharing your story. I'll put everything that we talked about today, all the links, on our show notes page at extraordinarymomspodcast.com, so people can definitely follow along with your journey. And we just wish the very best for Ivana and for your whole family. I think you are so remarkable, Kiara. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thanks so much.
Have an awesome day. I want to thank Kiara for being on the show today. Can you believe all that she's been able to handle? I mean, to go from not having any medical training to carrying around oxygen tanks and trach tubes and cleaning things and feeding tubes. I mean, she is literally doing a full-time job with taking care of her daughter. I mean, motherhood is hard as it is, but man, she is amazing what she's been able to handle. So I just want to thank her for sharing her story. She's so courageous, and we hope amazing things for Ivana and the rest of her surgeries and everything that she has coming up. Wow, moms are so extraordinary. So I want to thank you for tuning into our episode today. As always, you can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3, on Facebook at Extraordinary Moms Podcast, and at our website, extraordinarymomspodcast.com. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Happy Valentine's Day. Give an extra squeeze to those you love. And thank you for sharing the podcast. If you love this podcast, please make sure that you're subscribed on iTunes. That way you'll never miss an episode. And if you've left a rating or a review, thank you so much. And if you haven't already done that, that can be your Valentine's gift to me. Share the love by sharing your review. It really helps other moms to find the show. I hope everyone has an awesome day, and I'll see you next week for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.